This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Was an Eskimo. Frozen wind began to blow.
Welcome from the Great White North. This is Independent Comic Book Noise, episode 332, the totally independent podcast that's sponsored by nobody. I'm Steve Raker in the Comic Book Bunker in frozen upstate New York. And we've got Kevin, Whirlwind X, up from the even more frozen Toronto. And Phil up in Ottawa, that is always frozen, isn't it?
Good day, always. It's horrible.
And Andrew, the LA Rabbit, in sunny, dry Los Angeles.
But he'll still complain that it's too cold.
Oh, yeah.
It is. It is too cold.
Oh, I got to put a little sweater on. It's horrible out. That's how he complains to me sometimes.
And as a nice New Year's gift to us all, we've got Andrew Shaw with us all the way from the other side of the globe.
Hello.
Woohoo. Yay. It's not Marvel Noise.
Summer here, but you wouldn't think it.
Oh, no?
No, it's fairly cold today.
This is the Totally Selfish Podcast, Andrew. We're the Marvel Noise guys, and thanks to Derek Howard and comicbooknoise.com and his Deliberate Noise Network that you can find more about on deliberatenoisenetwork.com. He's given us this little forum to be able to talk about everything not Marvel and DC and talk about indie books. How cool is that?
You mean there's other books than Marvel and DC?
You usually don't get to hear us talk about other books, but
yeah,
here's
the
our
good
chance.
Ones.
And you'll never get to hear us talk about DC ever.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's it.
That still makes me mad. We'll take over that podcast one day.
You can also find and leave comments for us and like our Facebook page if you would care to do
Please.
So.
Ask us questions. Do anything. Please get involved.
Yeah, now that the New Year's come around, we're going to get some more episodes out. And now that Disney has released its stranglehold on the LA Rabbit. And we can get him on more often.
Yeah.
Who knew he was the biggest Marvel fan? Like, really?
So what you guys been reading? Phil, what do you got?
All right. I think I have something Kevin read, too. Sheltered? 1-5?
I didn't read that. No one reads the emails.
I thought you read number one a long time ago or something. You told me
Oh, right. Good. Yeah, I did read the first issue. What am I talking about?
Anyway, I read 1-5, which is the first trade. And, not to spoil too much, but this doesn't really spoil it because in the first comic you're going to know it right away. But basically it centers around a town of survivalists, preppers. Do you guys know what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah, where they prep for doomsday and all that.
So, Phil, oh no, never. Sorry, I thought this was colonized. Wrong book. I withdraw my... Because that's
this
also
one,
about... It's the same setup.
Oh,
except
is it?
They
okay,
fight
I haven't
aliens.
Read that one yet. Yeah, this one, there's nothing supernatural, nothing like that. But it's co-created, written, and lettered by Ed Bryson, I want to say.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then also co-created and illustrated by Johnny Christmas.
I met both of those guys.
Yeah, me and Kevin met them in Toronto this year and got a couple issues signed. But yeah, so the first 5 issues are out and... basically, it starts off with in this doomsday prepper town where they're just getting ready, like normal, just getting ready for a disaster that's probably never going to come. And basically, what this whole comic is about is the kids kill off all the adults, kind of like Children of the Corn. So it's basically that around this camp or whatever. So it's more like... Basically, there's only 2 people that aren't almost brainwashed by this one kid kind of controlling them all. So it's them kind of dealing with these now crazy kids that are in charge of this camp and cutting them off from the whole outside world.
It seems like Doomsday never came, so they made Doomsday come.
Yeah.
Is this, this is a book from Image, right?
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, okay, yeah. I've read an issue of it. Okay.
Okay. Did you like the first issue?
There's an awful lot of like Doomsday and Preppers and all these ones. I get them all run together. Even though they're all wildly different books, they sometimes run together in my head.
Yeah, because, yeah, this is a very typical story, but it's more I just find like it's like watching an episode of Lost with lots of mysteries, and there's a lot to kind of get you into the series.
A lot of people getting accidentally shot and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How's the art?
You could probably describe it better than me, Kevin.
Oh, geez. I'm trying to remember.
I love it myself.
Like, I remember my Hammerhead sketch for my Spider-Man Jam piece more than I remember the art in the issue, honestly. But he pulled off a pretty sweet Hammerhead.
I remember the Hammerhead, so.
Oh, it's the same artist?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to go for that. I'm like, what are the odds? I'm like, yeah, this works out pretty well. And I'm like, good price. And I'm like, yeah, I totally got to go for this.
So Sheltered, huh?
Yeah, it's for me, it's definitely, you got to pick it up. And I believe, Kevin, you said the trade was like $10, right?
Yeah, I think it's one of the intro price trades from Image. Like, sometimes they do that for series.
Yeah, I picked it up in issues, and I'm going to continue to. Because for this comic, it's one of those comics that works well month to month. Like, it gives me just what I need for that month, and there's a cliffhanger to bring me back in every issue. I find.
Cool. Sounds good. Andrew, why don't we get your a book from you while we have the sun behaving to allow us to clearly communicate. And you can even plug one of your own books, although we already have on a previous episode.
Yeah, you already have. Thank you very much for that, too. I'm actually going to plug a friend of mine's book. He's a Melbourne-based creator that Andrew Rabbit would be very familiar with as well. He's a writer and artist by the name of Frank Candeloro.
Okay.
And he just thought I'd talk about his latest book called Mail Order Mutant. not to be confused with our buddy New Mutant Alan.
Well, I was going to say not to be confused with Mail Order Ninja.
So this book's it's about a young man who's obsessed with comics. It's got lots of sort of rockabilly sense to it, sort of set in the 50s with, you know, slicked hair and leather jackets and nice cars. But it's about a young man who, it's almost like the Hulk, the origin of the Hulk. Young man who gets caught in a nuclear accident, but he's in a gang of street toughs, as they should be known. And yeah, he gets caught in an accident and it just sort of goes from there. I really love Frank's style. I don't know really how to describe it. It's very, like, lots of angles and very dark. And
lots of lines, eh, it looks like.
I would say almost like a woodcut type look.
Mm-hmm.
Woodcut.
Yeah, really good way to put it. And Frank is a machine when it comes to putting out comics, too. I mean, I think the last 12 months he's put out 3 books.
Wow.
As soon as he finishes one, it's off to the printers, he starts on the next one. And I know he's got one in the works already. This one only came out probably towards the end of October, and he's already finished penciling his next book.
Cool beans.
Yeah, I probably have three or four.
I really love his stuff.
I have a bunch of his earlier stuff, but the shipping costs from Australia means I only buy it once, you know, when there's a bunch to order at once.
Well, for this comic, you can get the digital for 99 cents or the hard copy for $8, it looks like.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so look him up. His stuff is fantastic.
Where'd you find that, Phil?
I typed it in. The company's called Franken Comics.
Cool.
Yeah, I actually ordered a bunch of them. I think you might have sent me one, Andrew, to start with, and then I ordered a bunch from him off his website after that. We did a comic exchange where I sent him worthless American comics, and he sent me cool Australian comics.
Just looking at his comics right here, he's got quite a few out.
Yeah.
I read the first issue of a book
from this past year that was four issues. Read the first issue and wasn't too engaged in it, but because of the creator, I picked up the remaining, and the subject matter, I picked up the remaining three issues and read them all together and had a very satisfying experience. And that is a book from IDW from this year called The Highways by none other than John Byrne.
That's the space one?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That young up-and-comer?
Exactly. Yeah. Young gun. Andrew, you're laughing. How come?
I've bought some of those. He's had a whole bunch of series, and it seems like I can't tell if they're designed to be short run, but it seems like they just kind of jump from one. He has a bunch that are sort of pastiches of his earlier superhero work, like a
Rock,
Fantastic
Paper,
Four style book, and things like that. And so it's just funny how they and there's the Survivalist one, the Dooms Point.
That's a reprint one. That I think IDW just said, do whatever you want, and he kind of does just whatever he wants, because he used to do a lot of Star Trek comics.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he do some Angel as well?
Yep.
I enjoy Byrne doing science fiction and outer space stuff. I thought this in particular, coming from IDW, was a really sharp quality presentation. There's a story, first of all, which is nice. The art is good. The storytelling is clean. It's Byrne, you know. He's not rushing through the backgrounds. There's nice details and noodling and science fictiony work on the space vessels and outer space landscapes and stuff. And the colors are really fine. The guy's Leonard O'Grady who did the colors. Really pleasing to look at. Nice blues, whites, and grays of outer space. And just I just found it really enjoyable to page through and read all in one sitting. The idea of it is there's a newbie. This new guy arrives to be the crew on what's going to be his first interstellar space voyage. And his guide is this experienced black woman who kind of takes him under her wing and kind of is showing him the ropes and stuff. And he's just reacting the whole first couple of issues, and you're kind of learning about what this future is like and how things work as he kind of learns how to handle what's supposed to be a routine cargo run. But it's not a routine cargo run. There ends up being like a surprise detour stop by the captain. And now even the inexperienced chick is out of her element, as she's not in the know as to what's going on. In fact, as the plot goes on over the four issues, the twists emerge, and it turns out that she's like the only one who is as she appears to be. Everyone else has a secret agenda. Everyone else has a hidden thing and is not who they say they are. And it makes for a really fun read.
And maybe I'll try it. I only got the first issue. Sometimes IDW distribution out here, you know, you can miss an issue or two. And I liked it well enough, but it wasn't anything that really... The first issue, I mean, it was solid, like you say, but it didn't blow my socks off.
Me neither, but but reading through the whole, having the whole thing there to page right through and get the whole story, it was just a nice pilot, if you will, for an idea, you know, a world-building thing. And it doesn't have to be anything more. It was just a nice little tight story that's just nice, like I said, nice, clean John Byrne storytelling, which is great. And just to drop the name of one of my favorite science fiction books and writers, too, is there's even a little like Arthur Clarke Rama vibe. Because there's like a giant floating vessel, space ark with gardens and everything for sustaining life on it. It's just a really cool science fiction-y John Byrne, nicely printed series.
And I think science fiction is his best stuff usually. That seems to be his love, especially like for his love for Star Trek, doing those comics and that.
Yep. How about you, Rabbit? What do you got?
Well, I had a couple of things, but I decided to go with the bigger company because you guys are always giving me grief.
This is new.
Boom Studios, you've no doubt heard of. I believe they're a premier publisher in Diamond.
Where the ground is exploding or something?
Is that a subsidiary of Kaboom?
Probably from a sales perspective, you're probably correct. But from a so what caught my eye, I do like Boom has made, seemingly against all sales, they continue to make inroads to attempt sort of crime and thriller books.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's some debate, certainly internally, about how successful the comic medium can be with those. But I've been enjoying that exploration. So the book I chose was The Deceivers, issue 1.
Oh, I was going to read that.
Boys pick that up?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, cool.
I didn't read it yet, though, but yeah.
What secured it for me is Stephen Grant, mm-hmm. who probably most of you know for the Two-Gun comic/movie. Yeah. But for me...
Well, he made The Punisher popular, didn't he?
Oh, wait.
That's on another podcast.
Well, we can talk about his history a bit. It's not like we're getting into it.
Isn't that what he's best known for? Like, really?
What he's best known for on Indie Comic Book Noise is for Two-Gun. Movie nice. And comic book. Anyway, as I was saying, but I remember him for Whisper, one of my favorite old-timey comics.
Yeah.
So... I always give him a shot. And then the artist is Jose Holder, who's done a variety of work for different companies. He's bounced around. I thought he was sort of an interesting choice because, like, if you go to his blog and look at, he's done some of the superhero stuff with, like, the over-musculature and kind of the more stylized look. Mm-hmm. And in these crime and thriller books, that's not really... You know, they're not people with muscles on top of muscles and things like that. But he does, the storytelling is fine. The big thing with these books is obviously character differentiation. You know, nobody's wearing colored tights, so you need to have a full cast of characters that look roughly the same, but look different. And he does a great job. But anyways, the setup is... It starts with some mysterious theft, and then we're dropped into this crazy world of freelance men of mystery. And there's this cowboy character who's the typical brash American, and then there's the other cold European, and they get drawn into these situations that are very tense with setups and thieving and damsels in distress, but maybe they're not really in distress. And setups and payoffs and all that world. I'm kind of dancing around about it because the fun, if you like these types of books, is going into that world and seeing who's going to betray who and who's going to twist. And the first issue ends on a really nice cliffhanger. But I feel like I got enough story out of it, which is always a difficult, particularly with these limited series. What I thought was clever is they don't put that it's a limited series on the book. But according to other things I've read, this is probably not going to go more than 6 issues.
No, it's not that type of story. Yeah.
That makes it hard to order, though, when they're playing that kind of game.
Four issues is enough, or 5 issues is enough for a story like that.
But I just feel like, because I picked up another comic, which will go unnamed, that also, but I felt like I just didn't get enough story. It felt like, I'm sure it'd be great in trade, but... If I'm going to pick it up in floppy, I need enough.
Well, you got to name it now or everyone will be wondering forever.
No one will care. But anyway, I enjoyed The Deceivers. I think if you like kind of that thriller spy kind of where people are going to betray people and you don't know who you can trust type of book, not so much the spy craft thing, like the not as kind of. Like the Brubaker one recently from Image.
Right.
I'm sure not so much the femme fatale angle that way, but more just these kind of loopy, sort of like the feeling from Two Gun, if you guys watch the movie a little bit, how everyone's working their own agenda. I like those books. But anyways, the first issue was good, a good amount of story. Phil, when you get around to reading it, you can let me know if you agree or disagree.
Yeah, I'll be reading it this week, probably.
I think the cover doesn't really land much, though.
It's not the greatest.
The cover is just the two figures in the front and the woman in the background and kind of an arrow.
With inside them chasing looks around. Great to me, though. But
I also think the $100 bill is on the table. It just looks kind of, I don't know, I would have liked to seen something more experimental.
Kevin, what do you and your cold toes have?
Well, I didn't read a whole lot over the holidays, but I'm sure someone got presents or bought themselves presents on Boxing Day or whatever. Whatever holiday everyone celebrates.
You and me both, brother. I bought myself a nice stack of good things.
So I was just going to mention a few things that I was looking forward to. Like, there was a great Japanese series called Planets that was like Garbage Men in Outer Space. Ooh. That came out maybe 10 years ago from Tokyo Pop. And I don't know why they decided to put this out now, but maybe because Northlander is from Vertigo, went 50 issues, and there's a Viking television series and everything, but the same author is now putting out the Vinland Saga from Kodansha Comics. The same one, same company you mentioned the other week, Steve.
Right, that did the Gon series, which I got volumes 2 through 7 of the Gon thing for Christmas myself, so woohoo!
Cool. Nice. But this isn't like your typical package. This is a little bigger, and it's actually in hardcover, so it's like it has 2 volumes in 1. So I thought that was cool. I enjoyed the science fiction series, and going from science fiction to historical Viking, kind of a leap in subject matter, but you know, I was willing to try it out. And then Richard Stark's The Parker, the latest Slayground that Darren Cook put out, a little slim. It's not sleeping.
Like school ground.
Those comics put me to sleep. I'm sorry. I don't care how good people tell me they're.
I've enjoyed them, but I haven't read this one yet.
The Jason Statham movie is phenomenal. That was sarcasm, by the way. Really loud sarcasm.
He's on my side.
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't like good comics. I don't know. And then the other thing that I tried out digital, and then I fell off the wagon, and then Dark Horse put a nice hardcover out. It was Bandette, Volume 1, Presto. So I'll probably review
I think
at least
that
some
was,
of these on future
originally
episodes.
A Monkey Brain comic.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which one?
So they don't have a printing imprint. For those who don't know, Monkey Brain is only digital, but then the print rights go to whatever publisher wants, because we may be looking at Amelia Cole in not too distant a future, and that was similarly a Monkey Brain title, but I believe the print copy came out from maybe IDW.
IDW.
And then Masks and Mobsters came out from Image, so they just seem to be spread all over.
Okay. Yeah. And now Dark Horse.
And I believe that the creators retain all the rights for the print, and Monkey Brain is solely the digital side of it. It's Chris Roberson and his wife, Allison, and I'm forgetting her last name, but I'm going to guess Roberson. And they helped set that up, and it's purportedly, by all accounts, a very creator friendly. He's has his own creator owned work through there as well.
And they're great books they're putting out, from what I've read so far.
Yeah, one of the most diverse publishers, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
What is Bandette, Kevin? I've seen the name. I've seen it in the previews. I have never really looked into it much.
Yeah, I've only read like the first issue, but it seems to be like an adventure book where it's like, I don't know if you would call like an urchin or a thief type of series, but they also have like people helping them out. But it's not entirely like I would also think of like Tintin or something like that, but it's not entirely for kids. Like, she walks in on 2 people that are in bed in the first issue, so, you know.
So it's not for kids at all, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, so it's, like, I don't think there's a lot of stuff that you would find objectionable for kids, but it sort of skirts that line, at least for the first issue. Like, I don't know really where it goes from there, but it seems like a fun series.
I think part of it might be the art style. It's Colleen Coover.
Oh, okay.
So it has almost an art style that would suit a children's book as well. But she did the Gingerbread Girl, was a big one. And I think you can get the first issue free, I'm pretty sure, of Bandette digitally. Like just maybe I'll throw up a link on the forums, and someone who's on Facebook can maybe add that to the Facebook page.
Will do.
Yeah, it's just funny because I wonder if the style, if they'll just do some outrageous violence or something. Because you sometimes see that with like simpler or styles that you think that are, oh, this is like a more of a kid style for some reason, you know. And then they're like, oh, massive violence or people getting their head shot off and everything later on, you know.
Go from whimsical to disembowelment.
Yes. I know Allred is known for doing stuff like that, so that's why I mention it. I'm like, you never know. You know, if anyone has any cool things over the holidays they wanted to mention that they haven't read, I thought I would bring it up.
You know, Jerry McDade wants to come on with us sometime because he got, and I both got, the Murata, the She-Wolf, Claremont Bolton oversized hardcover collection for the holidays. That reprints the old epic illustrated stuff, but it's like recolored and collects it all in one place and everything. And it's a old repurposed Red Sonja story that they didn't have the rights to be able to do.
Cool.
So they did their own character, and it ended up being Claremont's first creator-owned character.
Hmm.
Sounds like something I'd like then, because I love me some Red Sonja.
Yeah, oh, you would like this very much.
I've only scratched the surface, but Santa brought me the Creepy and Eerie Steve Ditko collection.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I still have to read the Ditko.
That little, he did a, he was a big Archie Goodwin fan. So when Archie went to Warren, he worked with him. And Archie wrote almost all but one of the stories, I believe. And it's fun, black and white. And Ditko gets to play with some different styles.
Yes,
I mean,
he
can still tell it's him. But
his ink wash stuff. That's the only place that he did the ink wash stuff that I know of.
Yeah,
there's like two or three stories there where he did some different tones.
Yes, yes, and it's really been fun. I haven't finished it, but I've been kind of savoring that slow and steady as a little treat for myself.
I love some of that old Ditko archival stuff just because I love the Ditko and I love the O. Henry things and whatnot. But some of the old Charleston stuff is just so vanilla. Or the Charleston. It might as well be the Charleston. But some of that old Charlton stuff.
Something to chew on, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And some of the only stuff that it seems that, you know, some of the, like Craig Yeo and some of the people who are reprinting some of the old, and Blake Bell that are reprinting his old work can get their hands on.
Gargo.
Some of it is just so flat. But, gosh, that stuff from the 70s where he's doing the black and white magazine stuff, I mean, that's a little more, contemporary. And it's still when Ditko is in his prime. So very cool stuff.
I've tried, but that out of the library, I grabbed some of that Captain Atom, those DC archives. Or I don't know who puts them out.
Oh,
but
now you talk about other companies?
But those things are really rough to... I couldn't. As much as I love Ditko, I couldn't get through them hardly.
I hear ya.
I started this new series. I'm not done yet, the first trade, but because I'm trying to catch up on some of these Image trades I have. But Storm Dogs by David Hein and Doug.
I almost bought that. I bought Ghosted instead.
You got to get this book, Kevin. It's beautiful.
That's the first issue.
It's like I say, I'm only halfway through so far, but it's. It's like like I have a whole new sci-fi property to enjoy now, you know, like Battlestar Galactica or something like that. There's no ships in this or anything, but I have this whole new world to explore now again. Basically, I don't know if you guys ever read the first, I think it was the first one, Predator versus Aliens, where they're on the desert planet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It basically same idea here. It's a planet like that where people mine on this planet for resources and, there's only two alien races on there that are like intelligent and then the humans. And basically there's all these murders happening on the planet. So Earth sends in their people to investigate what's going on, which is unusual for a planet like this but these murders are a little more suspicious. So basically, it's kind of like, I guess, like a space CSI thing almost, but without all the boring crap in it. And it's all on planet, no ships or anything like that. Not really a lot of alien races either, but it's just a beautiful comic. I haven't been, there's no action in it really, but I haven't been bored one second. It's definitely worth picking up. I've only read maybe 2-3 issues though so far. And it's 6 issues in the first trade.
Hey, isn't the same artist that does Braithwaite? Doesn't he do Storm Dogs and then he also does Unity? Isn't that the same dude?
I don't know Unity, so I don't know.
The Valiant Comics Unity?
Well, you should know that better than me. You had to bring it up, of course. Of course.
Of course. I'm just saying, I thought he was the artist on Storm Dogs because he's doing Unity right now. So, if I'm not mistaking that, I don't know.
What else you got to throw into the mix?
A book called Proof from Image.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I've read all of that.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely love this book. I mean, this is when I first found Riley Rossmo as an artist, who's become one of my favorites. But Proof is about a Bigfoot or Sasquatch called John Proofrock, who investigates cryptids or cryptozoology, like other Bigfoot or fairies, or let's say the Jersey Devil in there, and chupacabras and that sort of thing. Which is, I love all those sorts of stories, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. So this book was right up my alley.
And who's the writer, Andrew?
It's Alex Gratian.
Right.
Who I think,
yeah, it's easy for you to love that stuff. They don't have that stuff in Australia. We're the ones dodging Bigfoot and Jersey Devils.
And... hey, we've got Yowies. Thank you very much. It's like a Bigfoot, but his feet are on backwards.
Tasmanian devil.
Tasmanian devils are real.
Tasmanian devils are real.
Between the Outback and the Billabongs, they got enough to worry about.
Yeah, we've got enough poisonous things that are real. We don't have to worry about fake things.
Yeah, exactly. All the most poisonous things are found in Australia.
That's right. Makes us tougher.
That's what they say
hey,
about...
Hey, I live dangerously close to Area 51, so...
And you have to deal with all the gangs, too, in LA.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
But, yeah, this book's fun. There's a couple... There's one volume... I mean, there's 6 volumes of it, and one of them gets a bit dark and scary, but the rest of it is fairly lighthearted. And I loved in the first volume especially, they have a little cryptoid facts that pop up.
Oh,
yeah,
those are
the old pop-up video. Sure. And they were really good fun.
Yeah, I went on a Wikipedia hunt after reading that series and just saying, well, I want to know more about this or more about that.
I think I've gotten the first issue at a free comic day or at one of those, you know, first issue for a dollar type promotions or something. And I want to, and it's my own overgeneralization, but in looking at the art and kind of the style and the flow of the storytelling, I almost want to think that it's kind of almost an all-ages kind of a book.
No.
I mean, you say it gets dark, but...
Second book is about cannibalism, I believe, isn't it? Okay. Or
and the
like
Savage
that.
Dragon gets ripped apart, I think, in one of the volumes, too.
Yeah, so yeah, not for kids, definitely.
Yeah.
And the volume where they go back to where they meet his, I don't know if it is spoilers, but they meet his wife, his Bigfoot wife, was fairly dark and creepy.
Because the first issue is fairly tame, so I wasn't sure. Cool. Good to know.
Yeah, the second volume has a great moment, too, when there's like a few dinosaurs still around, and then they're like killing them and serving them up as delicacies and everything. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. Am I forgetting this wrong, or is Elvis part of the group?
Like, I don't think he's actually Elvis. I think he's just named. No. He's just Elvis.
Yeah.
And he's drawn to look like the king.
I think I always felt
not Jack Kirby. So. Not Jack Kirby.
Oh. Well, I got a weird one that I just discovered a few days ago and did the Amazon Prime 2-day delivery thing and had it, and I've read a whole bunch of it, and I'm really being entertained by it, is a book called Dread and Superficiality. And it's a collection of Woody Allen as a comic strip. What happened was Stuart Hample a cartoonist in the 70s and early 80s did a syndicated newspaper Woody Allen strip using Woody Allen unfinished and finished jokes and one-liners and gags from his stand-up act, books, and movies to do little newspaper strip gags.
So weird.
This is an Abrams comic arts landscape sized, oversized hardcover collection of, like, you know, what he considers to be, you know, the best of these strips. What's really cool and kind of adds to kind of the atmosphere of kind of restoring old comics work and presenting archival material is the strips here are all shot from Hampel's original strips. So it's basically like an artist's edition of these old strips. You can see all the blue line. You can see the paste overs. You can see where they changed, dialogue and erased, pencil lines and redid the faces and stuff. And all the strips are like yellow compared to the stark white of the nice paper that it's on. And it's really neat to both see it, in that old version. And there's something about newspaper strips in their original art form that seems to have a whole lot of extra things pasted on and done to them for whatever reason. And here it's no difference. Hearing the 11 o'clock comics guys talking just last week, I think we're talking about, the merits or lack of merits of having a Charles Schulz Peanuts, oversized artist edition. And I gotta say that the times that I have gotten to see original newspaper strips, they've been really cool to look at in original form. Whether it's been seeing Joe Sinnott with all his Spider-Man strips that he always has with him for sale when I get to see him a few times a year, or seeing this Woody Allen book in this form, it's kind of neat seeing the originals.
If you get a chance to make it to Santa Rosa, California, there's a Charles Schulz Museum and the airport up there, and they have a lot of the Peanuts artwork. And when it's blown up like that, even for a relatively simple strip like Peanuts, you really can sort of see the line work. And particularly with the older strips, I could see how he got shakier in a sense. I guess you could see it in the newspaper, but newspapers, especially in the last few decades, have really shrunk the space available. So I do agree with you, Steve. I'm not sure that – I don't know if I'm going to get that artist edition, but there is something to be said to really see the artwork.
But you and me, we agreed on the groove, right? We had the groove. But I'll leave you with this.
And I did pick up – my LCS was doing a fire sale on the Bone, so I picked that one up for $60. I probably wouldn't have paid full price, but for $60, I'm definitely going to buy – why not buy it?
I finally got my first artist edition. I got the Best of EC one.
Oh, cool. That's great, isn't it?
It's beautiful. Oh, it's so good.
It's bigger than most.
I understand the whole thing about them now, that people want to buy them all because it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, and that's a multiplier, right?
Yeah, and that's all different people.
And I was saying, too, recently that I guess it would be Archie that's publishing them. There's a couple of oversized hardcovers. That's the art of Archie and the art of Betty and Veronica. And it's got all different art through the ages. There's coffee table art books, basically. But a lot of the pinups and pages that are in there are shot from the originals, too. And so there's, I would say, half of the book is artist edition-like material being shot, which is kind of neat. But Woody Allen is one of my favorite comic personas and comic writers, along with George Carlin.
I've never seen one of his movies yet.
One of my favorite stand-up philosophers, for sure. But I'll just leave you with like an example of one of the gag strips is like a three-panel thing of Woody sitting there writing, and he's writing his private journal entry, and he says in the first panel, "I was going to write my autobiography, but then I remembered, you should only write about things you know about." Typical Woody Allen self-effacing kind of stuff. But a cool collection, big, nice, oversized hardcover of a bunch of this piece of Woody's history that I really didn't know anything about. It's pretty cool.
And on a related travel note, if you're in San Francisco, the Cartoon Art Museum is definitely a place to stop by. The last time I visited there was 2 years ago, And at the time, they were doing an Archie Comics. So they had a bunch of original Archie art. And that's not a comic I'm that familiar with, but it was interesting seeing the old Bob Montana artwork from many years ago.
On the Archie front, too, there Archie has come out in the last calendar year, I would say, now two or three volumes. The third volume might be just solicited and not out yet, or it might have come out in the fall, I forget. But there's three volumes of digest-sized but really thick like trade paperback collections called The Best of Archie, Volume 1, 2, and 3. And what they do is they take a bunch of selected stories from each of the decades of Archie Comics, and they split the book up that way. So the first, you know, you go by each decade all the way to current stuff. So you get a real nice mix of stuff. And before each story, you get someone's, like, foreword as to why they chose this story. And it's either someone who wrote for Archie or was on the staff or was one of the editors or was one of the artists or whatever. And they talk about why this story is significant. So it's like you get a little guide of someone saying, like, here's a particularly cool story of Archie from, you know, the 40s for this reason. And you can see the art march right up through the current stuff. And I find it a really entertaining presentation. And they're like $9 or $10 retail. So when you get them on Amazon or a retail thing, they're like $5 or $6.
Yeah, I can't argue
that's
that.
Really.
And if the 1,000-page ones scare you, they even make ones that aren't quite as good of a value for that are 500 pages, so that's a little bit more manageable if you think, oh, how am I ever going to get through 1,000 pages?
I like that for Free Comic Book Day, Archie releases an Archie Digest as well, like a fairly thick one for free on Free Comic Book Day.
I don't think I ever got those here in Canada.
It's Australia only.
Well, it's about time.
Rabbit. All right, am I back up, or whose turn is it?
You're up to bat, Rabbit.
All right, well, crowdsourcing has been a blessing to the comic book community, but I have
or
to say... I had a lot of enthusiasm for Kickstarter when it came out, and I've sort of tampered it a little bit, but I'm still there. I think I'm around 130 or 140 back projects. But it's getting to the point now where most of the time I'm backing established people or people that I have reason to believe are going to have high quality work, such as, there's been a lot of delays and everything, but I did recently receive my PDF copy of Grey Haven's You Are Not Alone comic. Mentioned only because Mr. Shaw has a contribution to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not my Kickstarter.
No payola
the Kickstarter,
there.
Oh, sorry. The Kickstarter I wanted to talk about was one I just took a random flyer on, Misunderstanding Comics. Have you always heard of this one?
No.
It's Tim Heidrich and Mike Rosen. And I'm sure you probably are familiar with Understanding Comics.
Sure.
Which is the classic text explaining how to read a comic book and sort of the philosophies and underpinnings of comics. Is this ringing a bell?
Right. Yep, indeed. Scott McCloud.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the classic. So this is a parody take on Understanding Comics, but it's, I gotta say, I literally laughed out loud at a couple places. Which
did
is pretty rare for me.
Did they point out hoof feet and elbows and
yes.
strange things like that?
Yes. It's it's pretty hard-hitting. I got to say, some people might characterize it as a little bit mean-spirited. And if you have a thin skin about comics, don't read this book. Because they take on everything from like web comics. I mean, obviously the 90s Liefeld thing gets a lot of play, but they take on anime. I just think I was surprised at how funny I found it, especially because sometimes with these things, they get lost on their agenda, but I feel like they really stuck to the humor. I mean, they're making a point about some of the big deficiencies in comics. But I think that they don't let the point get in the way of the joke. Like, if there's a joke to be made, they're going to make that joke, even if it undercuts potentially or at the sacrificing space that could be used to grind their agenda. But what I really love about it is the breadth of references. Like, I feel like I picked up maybe 80% of them, but there were a few things. Like, I didn't know who Jack Thompson was. He's a crusader against violent video games, so I had to Google his name. So there are a few neat references like that that I had to pick up. But I just thought it was really top-notch, and to get something random through Kickstarter that was a huge hit really put a big smile on my face. So, again, I'll drop a link for the Misunderstanding Comics. Like I said, if you have a thick skin and don't mind them making fun of comic books, comic book creators, and comic book readers, you might like this book.
This sounds great and right up my alley. Is this available mass market-wise now somehow or digitally? Or?
Yes, they have. That's why I'm going to drop it to their blog.
Excellent.
Because it's my belief they were saying, oh, you can get this at their store.
Cool.
Through that, it's misunderstandingcomics.com store, and you can get the PDF or a signed copy in the PDF through there.
Cool.
And it's a nice. You know, it's a smaller graphic novel, but it's like I said, I really thought some of it was funny. But you have to be. I even read some of it to my wife and showed her some of the bits that were particularly.
I want to read it, thinking of you laughing reading it.
there's just a lot. I mean, I think in light of. I've been recently rereading some big two 90s comics. And some of the artistic comments really hit home.
Gave you some more ammo for the next Marvel noise.
But yeah, it's a funny book. But anyways, that was my smaller company. But now I'll stick to bigger companies in the future, like I always promise.
All right, Kevin, bring us home.
I'm going to talk about some knuckleheads. Not us. Jeez.
I think those are knuckleheads.
Hi-o.
Oh, hey. Geez. Anyways, I might as well bring him back to Monkey Brain. I read issues 1-3 of Knuckleheads. Not by any creators that I was really familiar with. Written by Brian Winkler and art by Robert Wilson IV. But it looked interesting, like kind of simplest cartoony. I know that's not the best term, but, you know, it's not realistic, that type of style. So I'm like, oh, I think I can dig on that. It just starts out already, like, into the action. You don't get any secret origin, anything like that. This dude's just playing video games. And then he says, oh, these aliens came to me, gave me this crazy power. There's something attached to my knuckle. I call myself the Crystal Fist. And people all through the comic are like, really? Crystal Fist? And then they like, the aliens said something about the crystal light. Apparently they don't know anything about Earth. And so he just uses his superpowers to win at video games and steal Netflix and other, you know, tasks like that. So then, of course, a Godzilla monster has to show up. And they're like, dude, you got to get out there. You got to fight this guy. So basically the first three issues are him and his friends trying to figure out how they're going to defeat this giant monster that's ravaging their city. So he has his friend helping him out and then the pizza man, strangely enough. So, yeah, it's kind of sitcom-y. Kind of funny, a lot of fun. So I'm kind of curious to see where they're going to go with this, if they're ever going to get to the origin, or this is just an excuse to just do some crazy, mindless nonsense.
Well, how has Monkey Brain been on finishing their series?
Well, I don't know how long their series are supposed to go, so that's kind of hard to answer. Mm-hmm. Like, you just kind of wonder, like, I know there's been some one-shots, but everything just seems ongoing, and you don't really, like, the creators just produce an issue, and whenever it's done, it's done, and then you get it. It might be 4 weeks, it might be 2 months, you don't really know. So, but they're up to 4 issues now.
Interesting. All right, gang, We did. We made it around twice here, so let's call it quits.
I'll save the big Valiant talk for next time. Tease everyone with that.
There you go. And I've got some more John Byrne, but not in the way that you think for next time. Andrew, thank you so much for jumping on spontaneously with us at the last second from the other side of the world. That's pretty cool of you.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for having me on.
Woohoo. And thanks you guys, of course, Phil and Andrew and Kevin, for doing this again and assembling.
I can't think of a good quip on Assemble on the IndieCom podcast. Sorry.
You're welcome, world.
Listen to us also on Marvel Noise, of course, which is also on the Comic Book Noise feed and Deliberate Noise Network and all that good stuff. We're all on Twitter. You can get our handles on the forum or on our Facebook page. Come visit our Facebook page. We'll also link to the 11 o'clock comics forum episode thread that we have going related to this episode 332. And if you feel like it, you can even leave us an iTunes review. Why not? Right? We're the new guys. All right, guys. Thanks very much.
See you later.
Thanks.
I went walking in the wasted city. Started thinking about entropy. Smelled the wind from the ruined river. Went home to watch TV. And it's worse when I try to remember. Sit back and watch it run straight down the street.